Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with David and Dave, Season 2, Episode 43. My podcast co-host, David Todd, had some things he had to take care of today. We had a little scheduling conflict there today during the bye week. I was fortunate enough to get Scott Brown from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for a late Wednesday night interview, and that ran about 30 minutes, so that made for a perfect Wednesday bye week podcast. I asked Scott about Cameron Hayward, Hines Ward, Al Woods, quite a few players we talked about in this interview and some situations with each of them, and the possibilities of the Steelers running the table for the rest of the season when they get back from the bye week here. So stay tuned next for my interview with Scott Brown. Make sure you are following him on Twitter at @ScottBrown_Trib. And we appreciate him joining us late on a Wednesday night.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. It's bye week, Steelers bye week, week 11 of the NFL. And what a perfect time to check in with our buddy Scott Brown from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Scott, thanks for joining me on a, what's tonight, Wednesday night. How you doing?
I'm great, Dave. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
Happy bye week, by the way.
What's that?
Happy bye week.
Oh, yeah, happy bye week it is. I know you really enjoyed it, and we were talking before we got on the phone here that neither one of us really get to see that much of the other games that go around in the NFL, and it's not like I'm a beat writer. I'm just a blogger, and I know you guys work a lot, do a lot during the game, so I know you'll enjoy it being able to watch some football live this week.
I can't wait. I wish there were some better games. I looked at the schedule, and other than Baltimore-Cincinnati, it's just not many good games.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing we'll all have our eyes on this week is that Baltimore-Cincinnati game. There's a stinker on tomorrow night, and Monday nights haven't been that good, and I don't think it's going to be that good this week either. But, hopefully we'll have some close ones again this week, and hopefully Cincinnati can help the Steelers out and beat the Bengals on Sunday. Let's get right to a few things that are laying on people's minds tonight. And I know you talked a couple of these things on Trib Live Radio this morning with Ken Laird and the guys, and I'll try to dance around it a little bit different. The Hines Ward thing, of course, he's been banged up the last few weeks and of course missed a game, the last week before they played the Bengals here. Did they handle this right with him? I mean, I blogged about it earlier today that I just don't think Hines Ward is 100% healthy, no matter what he said to the media yesterday. Do you think they've handled this thing right with him?
I do, Dave, and I say that because Hines is taking it well. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's a team guy, cares about winning, especially at this point in his career. And I know he'd like to reach some of those milestones, and I think he will, but I think ultimately he wants another ring. And you could be right, too, that maybe he's still not 100%. And with the way Antonio Brown's playing, with the way Jericho Cotchery has played when he's gotten his opportunities, that maybe at least for now he's sort of the odd man out. And I don't know if that will continue, but I do think with Hines that he's going to have trouble getting on the field. And that's not a knock against him as much as it is a nod to what the Steelers have at wide receiver. With Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown is really come on. And again, Cotchery, and pretty soon they're going to add another guy to the mix in Emmanuel Sanders. So I don't remember a wide receiving corps, at least since I've been covering the team, that is as deep and talented as this one. And unfortunately for Hines, I just think his opportunities can be limited going forward. And the good thing for the Steelers is he is a consummate professional, is a guy that is going to put winning above everything else. So far, so good. The only thing is he's a prideful guy, obviously, an unbelievable competitor. And, right now I think he's fine with it. But if this continues, and again, he's sort of that fourth or fifth guy on the receiving core, I wonder if his tune will change three or four weeks down the road.
Yeah, that's definitely something to look out for. You know, and what I wrote about kind of today, looking back at some stats and all, you know, the Steelers, ever since Mike Wallace came on the scene, they've you know, it's no secret, they've been a more vertical team, relying a lot on the explosive play, something that fascinates me, you know, with those stats and the ability to win ball games. I mean, it's pretty evident that you can win by having more explosive plays than your opponent does, and defending against the explosive play as well. And although Hines had his most, if you look at his receptions last year compared to 20 gains of 20 yards or more, last year was his percentage-wise was his best explosive year ever, with based on number of receptions versus explosive plays. And with him not being healthy right now, which it's obvious if you watch those 9-10 of plays that he was in this past week, you know, Hines already runs with that little hitch in his step and has for a while, and it just looked like it was more defined in those few plays. So it's definitely something to watch. I think Hines will always have his place, though, you know, moving the chains on third down and in the red zone at least.
Yeah, and I don't by any means think that we've seen the last of Hines Ward. There's still a place for him in this offense, and I agree with you. I think he's gonna make some key catches for them down the stretch here, and I'm certainly not writing him off. I don't think the Steelers are either. But again, it's just, and maybe you're right. Maybe the bye week's the best thing for him right now. Go get a little healthy, maybe clear his head a little, and then come back. Probably in the best health he's been in a while, you know, since he's been dealing with that ankle sprain, and then he had the concussion-like symptoms. But I agree, Dave. I mean, the guy has too much of a track record, too much of a resume, and that's a great stat you pointed out. And I don't buy into the notion that he all of a sudden age has caught up with him after, you know, like 1 year, that it's this pronounced. So you know, the more you talk about it, the more I am inclined to agree with you that he is not 100%. And you know, maybe once he gets back there, he'll be, you know, become more of a factor in the passing game. I don't think we've heard the last of him, and by any means.
After, you know, I don't want to dwell too much into it. Here we are in 2011, and it's far from over and all. But, you know, when you look at it, he's got 2 years remaining on his contract. I believe each of those years, looking at my salary cap data here, he's going to be a cap hit of $4.6 million in each of those next 2 years. You would have to think this is probably, you know, this is probably going to be it, even though he said early in the year he wants to play, you know, 2 more years when he was heading into this year. I think we can both agree if he was to get that Super Bowl ring this year, he would hang it up.
Yeah, that might be the best case scenario, to be honest, for the Steelers and Hines. And I agree, Dave. If he wants to come back next year, I think he's going to have to come back at a significantly reduced price. As we've talked about, the Steelers are going to have some tough decisions to make in regards to the salary cap after the season, and they're just not going to be able to pay Hines Ward that much because, again, you know, they just have too much wide receiver ahead of him. And we know the Steelers, you know, and as much as Hines Ward has done, as much as what he's meant to Pittsburgh in the organization, they don't pay for past performance. And I don't think they would do that in this case as well. So, yeah, I mean, you kind of brought up maybe the best-case scenario is, you know, Steelers win a Super Bowl and Hines Ward kind of rides off into the sunset.
Exactly.
Dave, that's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. But that's the perfect solution to this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you don't want that awkward or that, you know, a bad ending in this, win the Super Bowl and allow Hines to go out on top.
I agree, and he's kind of said in some previous interviews, I think dating back to before the season started, I think he was on the Rich Eisen podcast one time, and I think he knows that third Super Bowl you know, ring that he would have would almost make him a lock, hard, you know, definitely. I don't think he's going to be first ballot Hall of Famer still, but I think with that third Super Bowl ring, there's no way they're going to keep him out in the future, so that's one thing to watch. You mentioned Emmanuel Sanders in there, and so I think I heard this morning you said he's still got a little bit of a limp going on. I'm kind of betting that he sits out the Kansas City game. Is that your feeling as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And just watch it. It's very noticeable, very pronounced for him. You know, almost like he's dragging that leg because of the knee surgery he had. So I would be very, very surprised if he plays against Kansas City. And even a guy like that, and especially being young guys, you know, they're going to try and paint as optimistic a picture as possible as far as playing. And I had a chance just to talk to him briefly, and he just said, hey, well, you know, we're going to play this by ear. And to me, I just can't see him coming back against Kansas City. I would think the following week is a lot more realistic.
Same with Lamar Woodley, too. I mean, let's face it, we are playing the Chiefs here, and probably unless they sign somebody after their game with against the Patriots, there's absolutely no reason why you would rush Lamar Woodley back, in my opinion, for this game against the Chiefs when you can get another week's rest out of him to have him ready for the Bengals game the following week. Is that kind of how you see that playing out as well?
Dave, I get the feeling the Steelers and Woodley are pointing towards him coming back for Kansas City. I had a chance to talk to Dick LeBeau after the Bengals game, and he seemed to be pretty confident that he'd have Harrison and Woodley at his disposal for the next game, which is Kansas City. Woodley said that, you know, the same thing, that hopefully he's back after the bye. However, they're going to err on the side of caution here because hamstrings are such a tricky thing. And you look at what's happened in Houston, how long Andre Johnson, I still don't think he's back after he went down with that hamstring against the Texans. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they hold him out another week, because even he said yesterday that, you know, you can't mess around with these things, because then you get into a sort of a bad cycle where you're coming back and keep aggravating it and you're not 100%. Rest of the season. So I think, as you pointed out, they are going to err on the side of caution here. So it wouldn't surprise me if they sit him another week. But again, I get the feeling that, you know, if they think he's made enough progress that they're at least going to strongly consider the possibility of him playing against Kansas City. And of course, a lot's going to depend on, you know, if he's able to practice it off the bye week. I think they're going to need to see him run around a little bit in a practice setting. And if he doesn't practice all week, I think it'll be another week before he plays. But again, I think they're going to try and give it a go after the bye. And again, a lot is going to depend on how much he's able to practice and what he looks like in practice. You know, if he's still favoring that thing, then I think they probably would shut him down for another week.
Yeah, I agree, and I kind of hope they do, regardless if he's able to work this week. But of course, we got a whole week and a half or so before we have to, or another week until the first injury report of next week comes out. So there's still some time there. Doug Legursky's another name that has kind of been flying under the radar. He was active last week against Cincinnati. There, of course, he did not play any snaps there. Is that dislocated toe of his healthy? And if so, has there been any rumblings of him replacing Kemo at left guard? Or Kemo did have a great game the week before against Baltimore, but Cincinnati not so much. What's that status there? And have you heard any rumblings behind that?
No, from what I gather, Dave, is that they're going to stick with the offensive line as it has been. I think, what is that now, 3 or 4 games that those guys have all been together?
Right, unheard of.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they like the continuity that's developing there. And I think, ultimately, Doug Legursky, that's probably the role that he's best suited for, is sort of that swing guy, that guard center, your Marquise Pouncey insurance. And again, they feel very comfortable plugging him in any 3 of those positions in case they need it. And I just think that right now they're going to stick with those guys, just because of the continuity factor there. And Kim Arthur, he can be inconsistent, and you're probably going to have to live with that. And I just think his size is, I think it's one area where Legursky may be lacking. So I wouldn't expect to see a change there unless there's some sort of injury development. But Kemo Atu too, I think the bye week should help him too. He's looked better and better to me, at least from a health standpoint, at least moving around. You know, he's been dealing with that knee since before training camp, and it looks like he's finally starting to get healthy here. So I wouldn't expect anything to change there, and that you'll have the line will start Kimoatu, Pouncey, Foster, and Gilbert, and then you know, Doug Legarski being your swing guy.
During the bye week here with Kimoatu, was there any talk about him going ahead and having that knee possibly drained again during this time? Have you caught any wind about that? Seems like if he was going to do it, it'd be the perfect time to do it. Has he had any swelling or anything, fluid buildup that you've heard of?
Yeah, you know, Dave, I didn't get a chance to talk to him this week, and you know, the crazy thing is with the bye is you only have the two locker room sessions, and I did not get a chance to talk to him. But I would think that if there is any of the swelling he's been dealing with, that you're right, now would be the ideal time to do it. But I can't say definitively if he plans to get that drained again.
Another name that kind of caught me by surprise this past week when we did our participation reports that we do weekly, rookie Cameron Hayward, for the first time this season, did not see any snaps on the defensive side of the ball. Have you heard any rhyme or reason to that, of why he did not see the field defensively this week?
No, I didn't. And I guess your guess is as good as mine is why he didn't. You know, because I thought he's handled himself well when he's been in there for the limited snaps, and I don't know if he had some sort of setback. I don't think it was anything injury-related. So, you know, the practice and in the locker room and seems to be fine. So, again, I don't know if really what's going on there, and it's probably something, you know, to ask Mike Tomlin when they do get back to the grind here, because I was a little surprised at that, too. And it's, you know, when you're watching the game, you don't really notice that, and then afterwards, people were talking about that, like, "Hey, this guy didn't play any snaps at all, other than he was in those special teams." And I'm not quite sure what's going on there, and I don't know if he maybe hit that rookie wall a little bit, or if he was getting out of position when he did get in there. But you know, my guess would be that Brett Kiesel, maybe that's a nod to Brett Kiesel and how well he's been playing, and that's why he didn't get any snaps. But I don't think it's anything injury related.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I didn't notice it watching the game. In fact, I didn't really notice it the first couple times through. It wasn't until we started charted some of this thing. It's like, hey, he didn't play there. And, yeah, that'll be interesting if you think about it. Ask Tomlin maybe, you know, next Tuesday or whatnot, depending on the priorities. That would be interesting. I threw that kind of tidbit out on Twitter earlier tonight before I got on the line with you, and several people replied back to me, any reason why. And I've got absolutely nothing to give him on that, because the guy, it's not like the guy has played that many snaps anyway, but what we have seen of him, I think he has right at almost 100 snaps for the season on the defensive side of the ball. There was no reason to think other than maybe, you know, maybe a bad week of practice, or as you put it, maybe that rookie wall, or maybe they're trying to get him back focused. But yeah, that's just something that caught my eye this week. Another guy that we you know, kind of flew under the radar that we saw signed back to the active roster is that Al Woods, the defensive end there. That this is a guy that they after the Saints drafted him and released him before the start of last season, the Steelers picked him up, put him on the practice squad. They seemed to be real highly of him until the Buccaneers snatched him off of the practice squad, and he's floated around Buccaneers and Seattle since, and they've got him back on the active roster now. Any kind of buzz that you've heard about this guy, and you know, is he going to be kind of be that backup five tech technique guy to Ziggy Hood going forward here?
Yeah, Dave, he's been on their radar for a while. As you mentioned, they were quick to sign him to the practice squad after the Saints released him. And correct me if I'm wrong, it was the 2010 draft, is that correct, when he
right, the Saints, I think the Saints got him in the third or fourth round, and he never made it, you know, he didn't even make it to the regular season. They released him, and the Steelers put him on the practice squad, and I think he lasted there until like November of last season. And then, of course, the Buccaneers got him, and then he went to Seattle In fact, I think he was the guy that Doug Ligursky clipped earlier this year that got Ligursky the fine. And I was happy to see this guy come back because I think he's a guy. John Mitchell must really like him, and I was glad to see him re-sign. I'm hoping he's able to stick there for on the 53 for the rest of the year into next year's camp.
Yeah, and I do know that they were high on him going into that draft, and that they. Again, my memory, it slipped me a little here, but they were considering taking him around where he went. I don't know if the Saints got him after, or maybe they were looking at him in the fourth round, but he was definitely on their draft board in someone that they really liked. And so they've kept an eye on him ever since he got drafted by the Saints, and he's had some travels here. But I'm guessing the thinking there is they like his potential as a five technique guy and really sort of hand him off to John Mitchell and let him try and mold this guy. I think they definitely think he has a future there, that he's not just on the roster for depth purposes. So, when and if he'll contribute this year, I don't know, but I don't look at this as something where they just signed him because they wanted some depth position. I think they look at him as a guy that is a prospect and is a guy that can help them down the road.
I'm talking with Scott Brown from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. You can follow Scott on Twitter, Scott Brown_Trib. He and Mark Cabali, his partner in crime, do a fantastic job. I'm like a kid in the candy store following these two guys on Twitter with the info that they get out during the week. Scott, kind of wrapping up here, get you going here. With Steve McClendon at nose tackle, he really, for an undersized guy, he sure is quick. And it seems now, when Chris Hoke was sidelined by kind of that stinger, that nerve regeneration problem that he had, it seems like McClendon may have, kind of swiped that position from him, backing up Casey Hampton there. Is that what you're kind of seeing? Do you think they believe enough in McClendon going forward as maybe a successor to Casey Hampton?
I don't know if they look at him as a successor to Hampton or a long-term or down-the-road starter for when that day comes when they don't have pick number 98 in there. But you're right. I do know that he has definitely passed Chris Hoke. And that's saying something, considering what Chris Hoke has done for the Steelers, especially when filling for Hampton. I think he's, 17-1 as a starter?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's something ridiculous. Steve McClendon, he's in the eyes of the coaches, he's passed Chris Hoke. And that's something really that's impressive when you consider that the Steelers, and I suspect most organizations are like this, when they have a known commodity, when they have a veteran, that guy is, they're sort of going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And they're going to have that comfort level with him. That's going to be hard for them to look at a younger guy, especially when a guy like McClendon, who's maybe not the biggest guy, was an undrafted guy coming out of Troy, but he's just impressed them that much. And a couple things that jumped out to me when Tomlin was asked about him earlier in the season is he talked about how this guy, he's really made himself into a player by working, being in the weight room so much. And sounds like he and Ziggy Hood live there, and that's a pretty good guy to be working out with. He's one of the strongest guys in the weight room, if not the strongest guys in the weight room on the team. And just seems like he's made himself into a player. Again, I don't know if that means that he can one day step in there for Casey Hampton, but he's another guy who I think he's more than a stopgap, and I have to think that with Chris Hoke on that one-year deal, this probably means the end of him with the Steelers, especially when you have a guy like McClendon who's immersed the way that he has.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. William Gay, what a great game he had Sunday against the Bengals, and I've defended this guy for so long, I'm also an Arians defender as well, and I admit William Gay's not
going to
not going to go to the Pro Bowl or anything like that. So, you know, kind of this, you know, I'm not the nicest guy sometimes on Twitter either, shoving some of this stuff back. I'm not like, you know, fortunately, I'm not like your media guys where, you know, kind of have to be careful what you say sometimes. My fingers get to typing sometimes. But, you know, he couldn't have handled this thing any better from what I saw after, you know, post-game and all like that. And I know he didn't give many good sound bites to use or whatnot from a media aspect, but, you know, that would have been the perfect opportunity for him to give the giant FU to everybody. But he took the high road, and I respect him for that. And, you know, is that kind of the vibe that you got around the locker room with him and the secondary as a whole this week?
Yeah, I did. And, Dave, I'm shocked. I didn't think I'd ever meet someone who was both a Bruce Arians and William Gay defender.
Yeah, and it's just not
many. There's not many of you.
No, and it's not just being contrarian either. You know, I think Gay has the talent to do what he does, and I don't think he's, you know, he's not a Pro Bowl type guy. I think he's serviceable for what he's asked to do, and he is what he is. I mean, let's face it, we would like to have three Darrell Revis back there in the nickel,
right.
but the talent just does not scatter around the NFL, and you're not going to be able to go, and the Steelers are notorious for not going out and being in the high-priced free agent market either. They homegrown these guys, and you know, it was just good to see him have some success there. And he's had a good season all around, except for the Ravens game and a few of those plays there, you know, especially that last one. He got no help from Ryan Clark there, but I thought it was just excellent the way he handled himself after the game.
Yeah, and you know, he's a guy. I actually wrote about him last Sunday.
And what a great let me interrupt you. What a great piece that was. And if listeners, if you have not read that piece on William Gay, I forgot to compliment you on that. That was a fantastic piece. This guy has had the cards stacked against him for a long time. So I just want to give you props on that, and if my listeners have not read that, make sure you go on Tribune Review and read that article. But go ahead.
No, yeah, well, thank you. And his teammates really they take more umbrage at the criticism he's received than William does. And he's a guy that he understands it comes from the territory, and he just sort of blocks it out. And I give him all the credit in the world, because, as you said, that would have been the perfect opportunity in Cincinnati to say, okay, you know, to his many, or his legion of detractors, you know, hey, look at me now. And, you know, it's just a credit to him, and, you know, a credit to the people around him, that he just sort of, he really acted like, hey, you know, been there, done that type thing, and didn't make too much of it. And I think that's probably the way you have to be as a cornerback. Just like the week before, he really, his demeanor wasn't any different than it had been the week before when he was answering questions about why Torrey Smith had gotten behind him for a game-winning touchdown at the end of a heartbreaking loss for the Steelers. He really was the same guy. And, you know, if you're going to play cornerback, and I hate to borrow a Mike Tomlinism here, but you really can't ride that emotional roller coaster. And it just struck me as, I guess, what a professional this guy is, that, you know, didn't get too high, just as the previous week he had not gotten too low, didn't get down on himself. And, you know, in the course of doing that article, and you know we're not supposed to root for guys, but when you, honestly, and Dave, I did write it not to say, hey, quit picking on William Gay, because criticism comes with the territory when you're an NFL player.
Right.
That's part of the deal. But I wrote it just to say, hey, you know, before you, you know, maybe to tamp down, I don't want to say hatred, but before you just mercilessly ridicule this guy or boo him or whatnot, just know the person behind the player. So that is kind of why I wrote it. And even I was a little surprised in talking to some of his teammates how strongly they defended him in saying not only would fans maybe watch what they say if they knew his story, but also, hey, this guy doesn't deserve the criticism he gets. You know, sometimes when he gets beat, it might be the scheme. And then the other thing is, I heard is, it happens. You play cornerback in the NFL, you're going to get beat unless you're Darrell Revis.
Right.
I mean, it really is. And especially now in what a pass-happy league has become and how weighted the rules have been, how the rules have been tilted toward the offense, it's just hard to play cornerback in this league. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see him in a Pro Bowl, but I think he's serviceable. And I think, really, he'd be an excellent nickelback. I think that maybe that's if he stays with the Steelers, I think that he'd be best suited for that role of nickelback. And I think he's a really good nickelback.
And wrapping up before I get you out of here, the tough game left on the schedule for the Steelers on paper, of course, and of course we still got the Bengals one more time. The 49ers is going to be an interesting matchup now that none of us probably had circled on the calendar heading into the season. Can the Steelers run the table, or can they at least go 5-1 over these last six games?
Yes, I think 5-1 is realistic. I'm not going to write off San Francisco as well as they're playing, and the fact that it's out there, because I think the Steelers can match up with them. And again, I mean, it's I'm still not completely sold on the 49ers, but I think 6-0 is going to be a little too much to ask. I think they're going to stumble somewhere. You got to think they're going to beat the Browns twice. You got to think Kansas City, especially if Tyler Pop is a quarterback, they're going to win that game. St. Louis on Christmas Eve, you got to think that's a W. But between San Francisco and Cincinnati, I think they lose one of those two games. And the only thing, and I guess a caveat to them going, 4-1 or I'm sorry, 5-1 or possibly 6-0 is you can't lose sight of what happened in 2009 when it looked like. I think they got to 6-2 that season, and then that's sort of whenever, the wheels fell off. I don't sense that's going to happen this year. I think this is a different team. But the fact is, if you look at that schedule, when they got off to that great start, and you said, oh, my gosh, this, we're looking at 13-3, 12-4, 11-5 at the worst. And, they had a bad loss out in Kansas City. You had the strange game in Baltimore with the Ben concussion, and then the Bruce Gradkowski turning to Dan Marino at Heinz Field. I guess, and I get the sense, talked to James Ferry a little bit about it today, especially about Kansas City, and kind of, you had some fluky things happen there. They let them hang around, had a miscommunication on the defense, and led to the play that set up that chip shot field goal. And he said, hey, look, we understand that we can't take any team lightly. I get the sense they don't look at it the way we do. And they really do sort of have that tunnel vision, and that they don't look beyond an opponent. And I think a good thing for the Steelers is it's still a little fresh what happened in 2009 when they lost to some teams they had no business losing to. So I think they're going to stay focused and, not get ahead of themselves. So I think 5-1. 4-2 at the worst, and I do think 6-0 is a possibility. I'm not conceding that San Francisco game, even though that's going to be tough traveling all that way and playing a team that's has the second-best record next to Green Bay.
Right. Scott, excellent insight as always, man. And I know it's Wednesday, and the team has left to head on out. And I know you're looking forward to the next few days here. And I just, I want to make sure I thank you as always, and Mark Cabali and Ken Laird and all the guys down there, in the media room and all like that. The great job that you guys do. I don't think that you hear it enough sometimes, and it sure makes a fan from a fan's perspective following their team closer. And getting the type info that you guys get out, especially in the new media age and all like that, I just want to make sure I thank you for everybody else out there, and you do a great job at what you do.
Yeah, we're still wondering if it's just one of you. If there's got to be a couple copies, right?
No, In fact, I talk about cloning all the time, brother. And I can't wait till that day comes, man, because I'm going to be all over it. But that's Scott Brown, everybody, from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Scott, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Dave. Enjoy the bye.
All right, you too.